Good day, good afternoon, good evening, whatever time it is. This is the Franklin Senior Center Writers Group.
And it's always a good time to listen.
Absolutely, because we're going to have some fun today, and we're going to start with some introductions. So you're hearing Steve Sherlock here.
And I'm Bill Wiley.
And I'm Faith Flaherty.
Voice Jack.
And I am still Peter Jack.
Still as well. Are you as still as that sentence you were thinking of?
Yes, indeed.
See how I gave you that segue? Now the door is wide open.
Wide open. It. And I'm going to stumble through it.
Stumble? Uh-oh.
In our last thrill-packed episode, we tried the telephone tag routine of somebody starts with a sentence, other people then add a sentence to it, and we keep on randomly writing in that order. And so the sentence, oh, the show, is, sitting there in the office, they wondered about the elephant in the room. Or, in fact, it might have been a dead moose. All the same, they just didn't know what to do about it.
We figured that the elephant must have stomped and killed the mouse, the moose.
The mouse or the moose, or both.
Snagglepuss over here, mooses.
I wonder if we could take the moose and eat it. You know, who do we know that could shave the hair off the moose? And I don't know how you go about fixing this, but I imagine if we go down to the butcher shop, take the moose down. But how are we going to get that big thing in my car, a Honda Civic?
Tie it to the top. That's all you have to do. Nobody's going to notice you driving down the street with a moose tied to the top of the car. People do it all the time.
Right. And then bring it to Tom at the butcher shop, and he'll do all the dirty deeds and give us back some nice moose steaks and maybe some ground moose, and we can have some moose burgers later.
I don't know. How do you fix moose burgers? I mean, how about moose steak? Now, how efficient is Tom in this? I mean, how many moose does he ever butcher? So maybe we should take it to place down the road where they have all the wild animals. Do you think they would know who to talk to about this? I know I've never had moose, and they say it's terrific. Now, how would you cook it? What kind of seasoning would you put on it?
Having had bison, which is similar in size, less antler, but certainly good sized, it tends to be a leaner meat. So I don't know if it's comparable to moose or not, but bison burgers were good. We generally used almost any of the kind of grill mates, the seasonings. You could use almost anything, or just be simple with, you know, a little pepper and then add salt to your taste.
And we'll serve it with a nice Chianti and call it the Bullwinkle Special.
I always thought moose was a dessert.
Ah!
Then you'd have a full moose plate.
There you go. Okay, I think we've beaten that one to death enough.
I think so.
Well, it just shows a little bit of a sample of how creative you can get in a room of creative people.
Or how demented.
Well, you know, there's a scale.
There's a scale.
You know, first lines are very important, because if you're ever in a bookstore or a library, if you open up a book, first I look at the type. You know, I have a certain type. And or font, and that I like, and it's the first sentence or the second sentence that has to catch your eye.
Yes.
And make you want to get the book.
I remember when you were writing, you in fact did something that was clever. Was you started the first sentence as dialogue, right out of the gate. When I think your hero in Allison Peters was being fired.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I went to an all-day writer's workshop with Donald Mast, M-A-A-S, I think that's how you pronounce it. He publishes, but he's also an agent, but he also writes books. And he, I'll never forget, I mean, it was a full house. It was at a place like Doubletree or something like that. It was a long time ago. And the Mystery Writers of America, which I belonged to at that time, sponsored it. So he always said that 9 out of 10 times, a book that he looked at always started with dialogue. And there's nothing wrong with that, really.
Yeah.
The dialogue is good and eye-catching. He also said, what's wrong with killing the dog? You know, a lot of people won't have their dog killed or their cat killed.
Right.
But he said, nothing wrong with having your dog killed. And of course, in my books, I have Muffy, which is a cat. And I'm really allergic to cats, actually. So, and I prefer dogs. So I have thought of that line and somewhere in my second book or third. Maybe Muffy will, you know, be shot or something. But I'll have to think about that because Muffy's a good cat, you know.
In the Disney movie, remember that they shot Old Yeller.
Mm. Oh, I still remember crying over that.
Yes.
They don't have movies like that. They're all animated stuff. Right. And that tells you right there that it's not real, you know.
Right.
Where Old Yeller, you were there. That was your dog.
That's right.
Yeah,
so, Alice...
Yeah.
Now being a published author, I have taken the liberty.
Murder is Bad Press, available at Amazon.
There you go. I have Murder is Bad Press, available at Amazon. Order today and avoid bitter disappointment. I have taken the liberty of starting your next novel.
Ooh.
Oh.
So I have written page.
You want to tell me about it?
I have written page one of a novel by Alice Judge called Murder is Well Dressed.
Wow. Okay.
So I will read.
How do you think that? Are you going to read it to me?
I'm going to read you page one right now.
Oh, good.
Murder is Well Dressed. Allison didn't get the memo. Standing in the ballroom archway, she thought, what the hell? The Halloween costume theme was to be King Arthur's Merry-Old England Fantasy Ball. She was dressed more appropriately for Barnum and Bailey. Oops. He clanked into the ballroom like the Tin Man from Oz, a steely, confident countenance in an equally steely ensemble, her knight in shining armor. Literally, he amped up the shining armor gag by slinging a bottle of turtle wax in his fanny pack. He encouraged folks to polish various parts of his costume. Great icebreaker activity. He cracked one-liners about some folks rubbing him the wrong way, the ladies taking a shine to him, etc. Clever. Allison always liked clever. She fancied him as her knight for the night. She wanted to polish his lance, perhaps even his codpiece. He was bold, and breaking his ice required a bold move. It would certainly get a rise out of Sir Galahad, perhaps too forward. Allison parked herself strategically several feet behind his tight behind. She looked and felt like a party polka-dotted Stay-Puffed Marshmallow, waddling around in her fat clown suit, complete with the oversized red shoes and wild rainbow hair. Not her best look. How to break the ice? So Allison ripped off her clown nose, rolled it right past him on the floor. Sir Galahad carefully bent down, picked it up, turned to look back toward where the synthetic schnoz came from. She pointed to her real nose and asked Steely Dan to pin the nose on the dorky, a clown. Ice broken. He smiled. She quipped, I feel absolutely naked without it. He chuckled. You certainly don't look naked in your poofy clown getup. And she demurred coyly. Well, we could fix that. There's a cute ballerina trapped inside all this. Perhaps you could help me escape. It took him only a second to follow her lead. Gently pressing her nose back where it belonged, he then touched her red dotted cheek ever so softly. I think cute ballerina qualifies, for a damsel in this dress is indeed a damsel in distress. Permit me. I am Sir Jace, ever at your service, milady.
Booyah!
She hit it right on the nose. She thought, Jace, of course you are. Then Allison popped her parasol and confetti flitted everywhere. She and Jace headed for the bar. Lots of costumes sported gag effects. Jace's turtle wax gag, Allison's confetti-popping parasol. One particularly striking gag was the tuxedo-clad waiter, a character from the board game Clue. He sprawled himself across the ballroom floor, carving knife in his chest and a sign that said, I'm clueless. At first, Allison thought, well, that guy didn't get the King Arthur memo either. His uncomfortably awkward stillness, the blank stare, the knife, oozing blood, all very credible. Allison pointed at him and declared, I think the chef did it in the kitchen. Then she realized this dumbwaiter wasn't kidding. He was dead.
Wow. Well, I'll have to. I think that's better than my birthday, too. Well.
And we're off to the races.
Yeah.
My book gave you that idea. Well,
yes.
There's something to be said about that, I guess. I can hardly wait till the second page.
Well, there you go. We're going to have to just work on that, aren't we?
With or without a costume. Open to all kinds of possibilities with that
impressed.
First page.
Part of what motivated this was actually, it was interesting. I was listening to NPR a couple of weeks ago, and there was an interview, and the topic was self-published authors. So there were two self-published authors who were being interviewed. One of them wrote in a genre called romanticy, and romanticy is a recent genre where you combine the romance novel and the general fantasy novel, you know, sci-fi, fantasy, whatever. And those two things come together where you've got some giant force that needs to be vanquished and at the same time a love interest torridly going on somewhere in the middle of all that. And apparently the genre is really doing well. So in my own twisted style, I thought, well, you know, we could add a third genre, hence the murder mystery, piled on top like so much chocolate sauce. And that's what got me to saying, well, Allison Peters could qualify in all three.
So the new genre would be romance murder.
Yes.
Or murder romancy.
Murder romance. Murder romance. Murder romance.
Well, it depends who you talk to, who's buying the book.
Right.
Whether they're romantic or whether they like murder.
And romance. You know,
so
romance.
It's there for everybody.
Romantic,
right?
Murder.
Romance noir.
Romance.
Ooh.
Noir. Throw in a little travelogue in there as well.
Well, sure, know. Why not?
Why not?
The thing seems to be a lot why of books not? That I'm reading, they go into detail of the dinners they have, or the wine that they have.
That's called filling the page.
Cranking the word count.
So getting back to my suggestion for the senior center, Peter, do you know of any other self-published authors that are seniors? I'm sure they're out there.
I'm sure they are. There were, I mean, I don't know how many are in Franklin. There were a couple I knew when I was in Medfield years ago. They wrote a series about the ladies' garden party. And they were murder mysteries, by the way.
Yeah, I've been fortunate to interview probably six or eight local Franklin authors who
Yeah, you know. Yeah, so... Are they seniors?
Not all of them. So a couple are, yes. But some of them are of the younger set. But I don't discriminate on age if they write a good book. So we need to talk about things, and we talk about books.
You start getting AARP when you're 50. So 50 is a senior.
I mean, 50 is the new 40 now.
Yeah, but it's considered seniors.
But I was suggesting it for the senior center, but I wouldn't mind it at the library as well.
That'd be an opportunity.
So maybe, you know, but I'm supposed to be getting my books. I ran out of books, and every author's delight, of course, but they want me to do a big, big financial campaign to publicize. I'm not doing that. I want to see how much I can do by myself, because I do enjoy PR.
That's the way you should do it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, especially half the time I don't know what they're talking about.
Well,
and the giant PR campaign is something that I would file under cashectomy.
Yes, I believe in that myself. I didn't consider, Steve, I didn't consider June when I wrote this. It's been kind of a crazy month, but I'm going to talk to you about the Hyacinth paper. And I read this to Faith and Bill one time, and they enjoyed it. This past Easter, I was reminded of a humorous story concerning hydrangeas. Since I was given a hydrangea by my son's family, and I gave one to my son-in-law's mother when my family and I were there for Easter. It was a coincidence. I had very dear friends, Bob and Beverly. We had many years of friendship. Bob was my husband Leo's roommate when they were single. We married around the same time, had children close in age, and through the years had a wonderful friendship. After my husband Leo passed, they often asked me to visit for a weekend. It was during a weekend that this incident with hydrangeas happened. On Sunday, Beverly and I went to her church. Afterwards, at coffee, she and I sat with three of her friends. Soon all the women started talking about dried hydrangeas. I could have cared less, if you know what I mean. But soon I heard that the five of us, three of her friends, Beverly and I, were going out to look to find some hydrangeas. They were all so excited about the prospect that I wondered what the big deal was. So anyway, one woman who knows where there was a lot of them led the way in her car. There were three cars, Beverly and I in one car and the other women in two cars. On the way, Beverly told me one of the women knew of a house that had a lot of prospective dried hydrangeas in the yard. If the owners weren't home, we would get out and pick the cherished blossoms. Yikes, did I hear correctly? We were going to stop at this yard, providing the family wasn't home, and take from there hydrangeas. What if we got caught? Would they call the police? Would we be arrested? What would the charge be? Stealing flowers from a stranger's yard? My friend Beverly was usually level-headed, so I sat quietly and hoped for the best. Luck was with me. The people were actually home. Everyone except me was unhappy. Now, what could we do? The anticipation for what we were doing was high. Could I be missing out on something? One of the women suggested the cemetery. Oh, yes, there were plenty of potential dried blooms there. When we got there, I could see it was true. I got out of the car. The women were scurried from tombstone to tombstone, delighted with their catch. I wished I was filming a video. Beverly kept encouraging me to pick the blooms from my bouquet. I did get into it a little bit. but still wondered if there was a cemetery police that would be making rounds. It only took 20 minutes or so. I breathed a sigh of relief when we got into Beverly's car and started for her home. By this time, Beverly had made two bunches, one for me to take home and hers. We laid them out on the empty garage floor to get all the bugs out of the bunches, since we were going to put this bouquet in a vase in our home. I left, as always, after breakfast on Monday, since my friends didn't want me to run into much traffic, Route 93 going home to Randolph from New Hampshire. I got my bunch of dried hyacinths on the floor of my car's back seat and left them there. I wasn't too sure of how I felt about them, to tell you the truth. I left them there for a while. I think I probably threw them out at some point, but just don't tell Beverly.
Isn't that called stealing?
Your secret's safe with us.
You want me to read?
Well, we think about solving the mystery of the hyacinths. Yes. Why don't you pick that up and go?
I have another love poem that I wrote. This is called "It's You I Love." I write these words not sure what to say. I know that I love you in so many ways. I think about you all the time. I want you beside me, maybe drink some wine. But I don't need wine to get me high, because when I am with you, the time just flies. I feel this love. You make my fire burn. I want your love in return. These words of love I need to express. You make me happy. You are the best. The best thing to happen to me in this crazy world. I just want you beside me, my forever girl. I wish someday we will be together. I will love you now and in any weather. Never thought I would find such a lovely lady. It's you I love, and I don't mean maybe. I express my love on this bright sunny day. I love you now and in every way. Okay.
That's good.
Yay. Very nice. And it's nice as always.
Yeah, I have a different tone to take. Sisterhood. Two girls who liked to play sisters. Both wear different headscarves. One is a hijab, the other one is a tickle. Will we grow old together? Will we see the sunset today? Will we see the sunrise tomorrow? Will we remember we are sisters? Will the open dead eyes of the Palestinian corpses and the gaping holes of bombed homes by IDF go away? Will the ground ever be green again? Will you feel your mother's hand saying, "May Adonai make you like Sarah, Rebecca, Rachel, and Leah"? Will you hear your mother's call to Salat prayer and bow and prostrate at her side? Will we grow up to be soldiers, and will we have to fight each other? Will we grow old? Will we see the sun set today? Will we see the sun rise tomorrow? I'm afraid we won't be able to forget.
Mm-hmm. Wow, powerful.
Nicely done.
You're in your offer now. I mean, I can't go any further. It has to end.
Right.
You're at the end of the land.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of a song, of course.
Of what?
Broomstick Cowboy. It's a simple song, but then it's all about war.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't play it on the radio because it's an anti-war song.
Gotcha.
But he said it wasn't an anti-war song.
What prompted you to write that faith? Was it after a news?
Yeah,
report?
All the news. We're bombarded with it.
No, it's a great piece. The difficulty.
So terrible. Yeah.
The difficulty in that piece, and well crafted, by the way, is, you know, no matter where you look, there are no winners here. There weren't any winners in October, and there are no winners ongoing.
Right.
I think David Petraeus, General Petraeus, summed it up well. said, wherever you go, you have to be prepared to undo the damage and leave things better than you found them, even in war.
Even in war.
And that was his challenge way back in the 90s. And he was applauded for it, and in fact, it worked. And that's not happening now.
No.
That's not happening at all now. So all we're doing is creating more terrorists.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's no known outcome. There's no direction. There's no plan. There's nothing.
Especially in that culture. I mean, there's a horrible verse in the Bible that says something about bashing your enemy's baby's head against the rocks, which is horrible. But in this culture, it's necessary because they're only going to come and take revenge on you.
Right.
They will grow up to take revenge on you.
It's and therein lies the expanse multi-generational challenge. It's crazy. And what's troubling is the fact that it has spread to college campuses where, for the first time, we see dueling protests at each other, and it becomes, you know, the mini version of what's actually happening over there.
And just the atmosphere makes it worse.
I know.
People do things that they wouldn't ordinarily do.
Right.
Ugh.
Because of the intense feeling.
Serious times. Well, I've got two things to share today. One's a work in progress.
Uh-huh.
It's not quite finished, but it's close enough, I think, that it'll hopefully get some of the points across, no pun intended. You'll realize that as it goes. In my two-part format, and the second part's not complete, so first part may still get revised depending, but enough said. Part one, let me tell you a story. It began simply enough, how do I convey my idea to you? Sign language began to get the point across. We were busy. We still needed to share our story. From a distance, I couldn't see your hand signed, but the smoke signal got your point across. So busy, we didn't want to carry wood to the desert. The story was pressing, so we developed a flag and semaphore system to get our point across. We stumbled about our busyness, and in stumbling fell and discovered sound. Ouch! Was a breakthrough to get our point across. Sound became easier to spread across a distance. Drum beats helped in the race to get our point across. Devices were crafted, refined to help carry the voice or the drum beats across greater distances to get our point across. Part two. In the telling of our story, through all the developments, time was spent on coding and decoding the message to get the point across. What did this hand signal mean? I don't think it means what you think it does. Was a problem in getting our point across. Coordinating the meaning of this or that made a difference. It took time to do. And for those who spent the time, they got their point across. The more coordinating, preparing made it easier to send the message and be successful in getting the point across. And I haven't finished it yet. So I'll leave you there at that point.
What did you title that?
I haven't got a title yet.
It
certainly won't be pointless, although it might be. I mean,
that's
part of the challenge.
Yeah, and the point is?
And the point is? Right, what is the point? Is it the message or is it the messenger?
Huh.
I mean, I was really dwelling on the fact that clearly we take so much for granted, right?
Yes.
The example I've used from time to time and even recently in another recording, you know, we talk about green grass. Well, your green may be almost the same kind as my green, depending upon exactly the nature of the grass, et cetera. And green for green grass, it doesn't really matter to that extent. It's going to get rained. It's going to grow. It's green. But when you start trying to take a particular green to do something knitting or to match a drape, that green matters. And there's a realm of green. So what green is it? Is it Irish green? Is it emerald green? Is it lime green, light green, dark green, evergreen?
Deep forest green.
At that point.
Yes.
Right? And then from that, we also have to spend time making sure that my green and my use of green is the same as your green and your use of green. And we take an awful lot of that for granted sometimes.
And you're wearing a green shirt.
And I just happen to be wearing a green shirt. You can't see that on the radio, but yes, I am wearing a green shirt. Yeah.
There's also the interesting thing about getting the point across. I was thinking about this one the other day. Getting the point across to a computer has to date required an extremely literal, organized, ordered amount of detail.
Yes.
If you wanted a computer to put on a fresh pair of socks, you had to inform it first to take off the old pair.
That's true. Yeah.
Otherwise, after 30 days, it would have really fat ankles. And that is the literalness of coding, which is, you know, getting the point across.
Right. Yeah.
Now we're coming of age where computers have context and understanding with AI. So now it's interesting to consider getting the point across to AI.
Yes.
And AI getting the point across to you.
Yeah. And it's interesting you mentioned AI, because the second piece I was going to read was Molly Venter, who's one of the folk singers, had come into Circle of Friends, does a newsletter because I've been following her. She mentions conversations between two women in films.
Yes.
Somebody had done a study. So yeah. That much is the intro, and this is her piece. In film, there is a Bechdel test, the so-called real woman test, coined in 2006 by Alison Bechdel. The test asks if there are at least two women having a conversation about something other than a man. A paltry number of films, especially before 2006, pass the test. Love and heartbreak is a ubiquitous theme in songwriting as well. In recent years, female songwriters sing about self-empowerment, but there's not a lot of thoughtfulness about the complexity of non-romantic relationships. Maybe this is because there isn't a lot of room in a pop song for complexity in general. My Sister Evangeline, I'm using air quotes, is a love song about family patterns and self-actualization. Presumably, the tumbleweeds whispered it in my ear as I toured the Texas Hill Country in the 2000s, as the song is not autobiographical. Great songs come from the ether. There, I said it. I remember the first time a song came through to me out of nowhere. I was in Laguna Beach, California, staying in my uncle's empty house while I took a break from touring. I looked like a wandering hippie, but I was still very much recovering from my type A identity. I made a deal with myself. For one day only, I would do exactly what I wanted to do. No expectations, no shoulds. I walked along the beach, fixed myself a salad, and generally lazed around. I took on my guitar late in the day, and Good Mother blasted through me in 30 minutes. The song was about my best friend's mother, who was suffering with late-stage Alzheimer's. It was the first song I wrote that truly resonated with people, and it was in no way under my control. Fast forward 20-plus years, and my favorite songs still come through me this way in a process that I describe as witchy. When the subject matter is clearly not about me, as in the case with Good Mother and My Sister Evangeline, I don't know the song I'm writing till it's finished. Here's what I have to say about songwriting in any creative act moving forwards. If you're writing from a purely intellectual place, like you're looking at a hit song and following a script for writing a pop song, then AI can already do a better job than you can. If you are tapping into a mysterious place that encompasses everything you've ever experienced, every glimmer on a plant, every overheard bit of conversation, then you are already the supercomputer. I thought that was a pretty nice way of really condensing what we're all trying to do.
Exactly.
However we get the point across.
One thing about AI, it doesn't have feelings, though, does it?
No.
That worries me. I don't know.
Also, too, there's this concept recently in cognitive science. There are a couple of things that have been explored. Number one, there are people in the world who have no inner monologue. There are literally no words. They're not thinking. Somewhere in the infancy of most of us, as we begin to learn to speak in those first years, preschool, we take up enough language where that language starts to roll through our head. And for most of us, there's an inner monologue that's going on while we go about our day.
Mm-hmm.
Cognitively speaking, it has come to many scientists to believe that there is not only a robust inner monologue going, there's actually more than one.
Yes.
That there is one that is sort of top of mind surface, not far below from your outward expression of yourself. Then somewhere deeper in all of that, there is another, call it more feeling, more emotional might not be the right word, but intuitive, internal, motivating, internal monologue that may be more wordless. And it may not be identical to the thought process that's going through your head otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
So what they're really trying to frame is the fact that there is this pathway from pure emotion, wants, needs, existential being, up through perhaps what are more than one layer of realization or actualization to the point where you actually speak to people. So I found that really fascinating, and I tend to agree with it. There's another body of work that says, we know our decisions somewhere between 5 to 8 seconds before we think we make them. And that underscores the notion that people vote from the heart, not from the head.
Gut feeling.
Yeah.
Well, and back to your earlier piece as well, dreams sometimes are image-based.
Yes.
And sometimes are word-based.
Yes.
Right? And maybe there's a distinction in terms of that derivation, et cetera, or maybe that's another aspect of it.
Could very well be. And there's probably some other interesting biases there with people who are perhaps more visually oriented, who take to the visual arts, photography, and the like, who actually tend to have more difficulty in places like the backseat of the car,
mm-hmm.
where they... you know, things are moving around them, et cetera, that are not under their control. And that's why sometimes kids get sick in the backseat. Astronauts suffer the same difficulty because what's going on outside the window of the ISS makes no sense visually while they're floating around. And their sense of locus is completely discombobulated.
It's kind of like my motion sickness. I can't always sit, in the backseat.
Yeah. Exactly right. Same thing.
The body is somewhat wired, deliberately I'll say wired, to have us make sense of the world as we know it.
Acclimation.
Right. We clearly learn from it, and you can get into the nature, nurture. I think it's probably both. I mean, to a certain extent, you're going to get nurtured, but to a certain extent, you're never going to be a basketball player if you're only 2'2". Right?
That's my problem, right?
My friend Faith says... I have to see the road,
yes,
ahead of me to make me feel all right. I don't know if
exactly.
That's true or not. I don't know.
Well, that's, you know, what's happening visually is synchronized with what you're feeling. it's all kind of one. And so proprioceptively, it's all unified. When proprioception gets ripped apart by different types of stimuli arguing with each other, that's when weird stuff happens. Hence the amusement park.
And if you're still listening, yes, we did deviate a little bit, but this is all part of the creativity we have.
That's another random walk.
If I get talking to someone in the car, I might not get car sick because I'm busy talking.
Right.
I actually wrote a song.
You're attracted and thereby focused on the conversation rather than in the movement of the car.
Yes. Right. A while back, I wrote a song called I'm Random, But I Digress.
I can get motion sickness right away. Read while the car is moving.
Bad idea.
Don't look down.
No.
That'll do it right away. Yeah.
The other thing that'll really throw you is trying to shoot the ground with a camera while you're flying in an airplane. I've tried that a couple of times.
Did you
never ended
out,
well?
Did you bail out of the nosedive appropriately?
Well, you know,
they're at least living to speak to it.
You know, back before drones were doing all the aerial photography, way back in the 80s, I used to fly with a buddy of mine specifically to do aerials of buildings.
Yeah,
and we would the plane that we had was licensed to fly with the baggage door off, unhinged, so the side of the plane would be wide open. Mm-hmm. Just like a parachutist plane.
Yeah.
And I would be strapped in, but leaning out of the plane with a camera. And what's going on the viewfinder doesn't even remotely resemble what's going on with the airplane.
Right.
So after about 2 to 5 minutes of that, you're reaching for the bag.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, that gives us an opportunity to come back to ground ourselves.
Oh,
in a
let's,
room
yes.
In chairs. And bring our audio program to a close, gracefully, safely landing for this particular episode.
And we do hope that you've enjoyed our random romp to nowhere.
And consider joining us for a future episode. We do meet twice a month, once at the Senior Center, and once here in the studio to record our ramblings. And thank you all for participating today. And even you, yes, you listener, you're listening. Thank you for listening and spread the word. And if you do want to join us, feel free to reach out to the Franklin Senior Center or send an email to info@franklin.tv or info@wfpr.fm. Either email should reach us and we can give you the necessary details. So for this round, Steve Sherlock will say good day.
Goodbye.
I'll be Peter J. saying goodbye as well.
Faith Flower had to.
Alice Drudge saying goodbye.
Till next time, thank you all.